You might know John Carney as the director of the Oscar-winning movie Once, or from a previous incarnation when he was bassist in the band The Frames, along with Glenn Hansard, who played the lead role alongside Markéta Irglova. Well, John Carney was also a co-director and writer of the hugely successful TV series Bachelor's Walk. Do you remember that? Look up, you're reeling in the ears for that one. Well, his career has gone from strength to strength, and he's back now with a bang in that he's got a big new movie coming out in a couple of weeks. It's called Begin Again. It stars none other than Keira Knightley and Mark Ruffalo, and John's with me now. John, you're very welcome.
Good to be here. How are you?
I'm very good. Let's take a look at this movie. First of all, it used to have a title. Now it has another title. What does all that mean?
That means that what I wrote down in my notebook when I came up with the idea is no longer the title of the film. It was called Can a Song Save Your Life for a while in Toronto when we screened the film. But it was never officially the title of the movie. It was more sort of a reminder when I was writing down the idea. This is what I should be writing about tomorrow morning when I
wake
up.
Well, besides film festivals, those who have talked about the movie have talked it way up. Is it really great to see lots of thumbs up? Or do you say, look, that's not what it's about. It's about the art. It's about making the movie. If people like it, that's just a bonus.
Jesus.
Come on, it means an awful lot,
question.
Doesn't it?
I would say that, you know, it's called the film business.
Yeah.
So it is a different racket from other businesses or different art forms. So it's like the music industry. You have to be mindful and aware that at the end of the day, you're going to be showing it to people and they want to be entertained and they want to come away feeling changed and uplifted and all that. Do you know what the best experience for learning for me about audiences? Bachelor's Walk.
Having done Bachelor's Walk on TV and seen how big it is, that was
exactly
the biggest thing ever of its type.
But not even the big, not even that. Actually, just feeling an audience, like getting into a taxi.
Yeah.
And your man going, where are you going? Oh, that was some of Bachelor. I love that show. Or, you know, and feeding back and getting information from you. You're getting into your dentist and he'd be asking you about, you know, Michael, the Simon Delaney character, and where is it going? Or I'd be in a queue with Marcella going to the cinema in the screen and somebody would recognize her from the show and ask her, oh, what's going to happen with you and Raymond? I got more experience from that show in terms of what audiences want than any movie that you'd ever make. You know, because you're getting it immediately. You're not waiting 3 years and then the film's out.
In terms of what audiences want, this is the kind of movie audiences want. No question about it. This one now.
Yeah, I think it is, actually. I'm not ashamed that I've gone definitely in this film for a crowd. Not so much a crowd pleaser, but something that, you know, it's got a bunch of songs in it. So they have to like the songs. Otherwise, you're screwed.
It's got a bunch of songs in it. Always was going to have a bunch of songs in it. But isn't it true to say that you more or less made the movie and put the songs in at the very end, kind of? The scenes with the songs in at the end.
No, I did. But the songs in a musical are like the jokes in a comedy. They have to work. They can't. Some of the audience can't get them. Like if you go to see a good comedy in a cinema, everybody's going to laugh at the same time. It's not like two people are going to laugh and the other people go, I didn't really like that joke. Otherwise, the film is sort of flat. It's not working.
Yeah.
So likewise, the music, and I'm not saying that music is super broad or anything like that, but it's definitely music that grabs you in, gets you hooked, and then hopefully if you get to see the movie again or you buy the soundtrack, you'll realise there's a little bit more to the songs than you thought the first time. But they have to hook you in.
But it is like, you know, to quote Shakespeare, if music be the food of love, and that's really what you're doing here.
Yeah,
play on.
That is true.
It's the idea.
In fact, that was one of the alternative title suggestions, Dave.
If music be the food of
love. No, play on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, play on.
a play on Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Okay, so the power of music to change people's lives and to make them whatever it happens to be. This is what you had with the movie. It was part of the narrative, man.
Definitely. Well, you'd know more about that than anybody, Dave, wouldn't you? Music changing your life, saving you from the brink.
You'd never know. I might. But then again, you were in The Frames for a bunch of years and you went from there and that, like, I think I toured the country with you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if you were in it at the time on the roller coaster tour, but I mean, like, every night going out there playing the songs and realizing the most important part of your day was that hour on stage as opposed to the other 23 getting to the damn place.
That's what I miss most about being in a band. In fact, that's all I miss about being in a band. It's why I understand when I meet Glenn that he's got this thing that happens every evening.
Yeah,
at 8 o'clock. He's going to be somewhere on stage. And it's something that I love about theatre actors as well and guys in bands. They have this deadline every day. It's wonderful. Yeah. I miss that. I actually do miss that.
Part
sort of
the
gives
clock.
The day a focus.
Yeah,
where
you jump up on the coffee table at 8 o'clock and realise, oh no, this is only the coffee table. I'm not on the stage.
Exactly. And you'll find actors doing that at around 8. When they're not on stage around 8 o'clock, they start acting the Mickey.
Okay, but also just to take a look at the Mark Ruffalo character in this movie here, which is somebody that you might have come across in the 90s. People who were important. Are you trying to say that people like that now, A&R guys, A&R being artists and repertoire, A&R being, if you like, the talent guys who sign you, whatever it happens to be, and the music company executives, they're not needed anymore, are they?
I'm afraid they're not. That was the idea of this film, was to take some of these guys that I had met back in the 90s when we were in the Frames, and there were guys coming over from England looking for the next U2, and they had huge amounts of money and unlimited credit cards and great hotel bedrooms and all that stuff, and they were here looking for the next big thing. That's dead and gone, and I wanted to sort of imagine taking one of those characters and seeing, well, where is he now? Like, where is that 28-year-old guy that I met in the Rock Garden in Temple Bar in 1991?
Yeah, exactly.
Who was telling me, you know, how great the Frames were going to be. Where is he now? Is he alive or is he dead? Did the coke habit go away? Did he marry your one in the end? Did he have the kid? All those kind of stuff. And also, chiefly, is he still in love with music?
I'll tell you where he is now. He's drinking at a bar. He's disgraced. And his name is Mark Ruffalo. And he goes to a club, an improv night or whatever. He sees Keira Knightley playing a song, who had been vaguely dumped or whatever by the person she had come to New York with, because, you know, fame came a-calling for one of the two people, not her, but her partner, Adam Levine. I know I'm giving a lot away here, but I'm getting to the point of where he is. And he says, wow, that's pretty good. I like that. Yeah. And it kind of goes from there.
Yeah, it's about somebody, you know, reigniting and reconnecting with the love of their life, which is in this case music. So it's about art being the thing, because I do believe that as a theory, and it's why the title "Can a Song Save Your Life" was there for a while. It wasn't meant to be taken literally, but it was meant to be mulled over by the audience member. Does art, is that what art is really doing? Is it in fact more integral? Unless just about sort of killing your time, is it saving you? Is a painting that you see saving you from the brink? Or indeed, is music and poetry and literature, is that actually informing the decision, the decisions that you make in your life, which change your life?
Yeah. By the way, we should say at this stage, the movie is now called Begin Again. And has been so far very, very indeed well received, which all helps, as you say. The people that you have in the movie, the last time we spoke to you in the programme, you were in a limousine or a taxi. I think you were going through New York. You were going to audition or whatever, some people. And you did mention big names. You might have even mentioned Keira Knightley. I can't remember.
I remember that.
Was it Drew Barrymore? No.
Scarlett.
Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. That's who it was. Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson. That American one with the blonde hair.
Indeed. You don't care about her anymore now. It's me and Keira.
Me and Keira. Scarlett, you blew it.
Anyway, Keira does pretty damn well in this. Look, Keira Knightley and you know, the Hulk. I mean, we're talking here, which is like, you know, what's his name? Mark Ruffalo. The two of them. I mean, these are big shots. Once wasn't big shots. Your Once movie from years ago, they weren't big shots.
No.
Is it funny to be driving through New York and to have to go to these kind of things and say, you know, these guys any good?
Well,
will they like me?
There's a little bit of that, but you know, it's kind of like, the good thing about those starry folks out in America is that they're really hardworking. So in a way, when you meet them, you realize, like, Mark Ruffalo or Adam Levine. Adam's no different from Glenn in a sense, as they're hardworking people, very dedicated to their craft. You know, Glenn's been playing since he was a kid.
Yeah.
Adam's the same. They're both stars now or whatever, but actually it's really about the kind of the work. And what you realize particularly about the American film industry is that a lot of the bigger the star is, the more work they've put into it. That's really the truth. It's a weird thing. It's like nobody's gotten there through who their dad was.
Yeah.
And they're not lazy about it, and they can talk the talk. They can talk about movies and they can talk about music. So once you sort of realize that, the sort of act, the worry or the fear about who this great person is comes down a little bit, and you start speaking the way we'd speak to each other, or you know, that you would with your mates back in Dublin. So that comes away very quickly, and you start talking about the job in hand, as it were.
But the music itself, I mean, sometimes it's indoors, but sometimes it's outdoors. Is there a huge difference between the two? Like, you had a scout locator kind of guy going, this is a great place or whatever. Oh, there you are, you were giving out to him, saying, now, wait a minute, you're looking at it through your bleeding eyes here. You've got to look at it through the ears here. You've got to see how the location in New York will completely feel in a 360 kind of way.
Yeah, well, they go and they record an outdoor album in the film, so the soundscape was very sort of important, which is one of the initial reasons why I picked New York as the city above sort of Los Angeles or even London, or that New York has a uniquely human sort of soundscape. There's always something going on, and as anybody will tell you that slept in a hotel bedroom in New York, the sound is the one thing that gets you.
Yeah,
you know, it's you can pull the curtains, and you can
have triple glazing, still doesn't work.
You still hear that sound of human beings making a fuss.
So was it difficult to record outdoors?
No, because we didn't record outdoors.
Ah, right.
That is the magic of cinema, right there.
The magic of cinema. Okay.
Had we recorded outdoors, you would not. It would be mush.
Electric Lady was the studio we're talking about here. Everybody from U2's next album, a bit of that anyway, to AC/DC, to Frank Zappa, to of course Jimi Hendrix, etc. Yeah. And did you pick that for any particular rock and roll reasons? Or?
No. We. Do you know why we picked the Electric
Cheapest.
Lady? It had windows.
Oh,
it's the one studio in New York that has windows. And it was great because we were there every day for 3 or 4 weeks and it was bright and you could look out onto, I think it's 8th Avenue, 8th, is it 8th? It is, yeah. And see people and interact and not feel you were holed up in a little dark bunker. And also I was like, that we Electric Lady is, as you say, I mean, it's steeped
in history.
I mean, the Fender Rhodes that you're playing is like Stevie Wonder's. He left there.
And there weren't a bunch of naked women there, like on the cover of...
No naked women, no, unfortunately,
I mean, like, if you look upon it in one way, this movie, Begin Again, it is a love letter to New York City written by an Irish man who lives in Dublin. Is that fair enough in some ways?
It's not a love letter to New York.
But then again, New York is as big a character as any Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley that I just mentioned.
Yeah, or New York is a character, but actually Dublin is a good character for films as well. I mean, I think Dublin came across well in Bachelors and in Once, but it's New York definitely is. I would keep on having experience where I'd film a scene, bring it back, and start noticing things in the dailies when you're watching it in the cinema that you had missed. It's just, there's so much, so many layers to New York in terms of, there's an old building, but there's a piece of graffiti on the old building. And there is a stencil of a phone number for apartments on the building that the landlord has stenciled. And there's a homeless guy. And and there's these layers of stories going on. And it makes you think that your story is just one story of millions that are going on in the city.
There are 8 million stories
in the
naked city. This has been one of them.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay, like, just let's take a look at some of the other things then. We're talking to John Carney here, by the way. Begin Again is the name of the movie. The release date in Ireland in the cinemas?
The 11th of July.
How is it nobody ever knows these guys? They always have to look out at the people who know better. The 11th of July, question mark over my head. Okay, the 11th of July.
Well, that because there's different release dates. You know, it gets released, it's platformed, so it's released at a different date in America.
Have you got all the movie parlance there? What did you just say? It's platformed?
Oh my God, it's like so platformed, this movie.
Jeepers,
are you kidding me? I would not platform a movie.
I'm going to have a book of these out someday. Listen, just taking a look at John Carney in the past, and not talking frames here, talking Shining Star, Hotel, November Afternoon, to be blunt, movies that people probably didn't see. Is that all right?
Well, yeah. Other than a few Irish people, yeah.
No, I'm just thinking, like, what does it do to do those things? Is it like, obviously, you didn't go from the ground to the best ladder, the best rung of the ladder. This is the rungs that you had to climb.
Yeah.
Good rungs?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't think there's any. I'm quite glad that Once, I guess, which is the breakthrough for me, came after a few attempts.
Would you listen to him? Once is the breakthrough. Was there any way at all while you were making this movie here that anybody said, better not say he's an Oscar winning director? I know, he's an Oscar winner and he's directing this movie.
Right, very good. No, what I'm saying is that it's kind of good. Like, Once didn't come from nowhere. I had made a film for Universal Studios before then, which didn't work, which had a bigger budget. So you strip it back to what you know.
Yeah.
And then you kind of get it right eventually.
What is that On the Edge or Catch the Sun?
On the Edge, it was called On the Edge. And it was killing. And it's a good movie, and Stephen Ray is in it and killing. But we had some money and we had cranes and we had some toys to play with. And, you know, you get it slightly wrong and then you come back and you strip it back to what you know. And what I know is where we grew, myself and Tom Hall, who made films together, we raised money through borrowing from our friends and we went out and we did it ourselves and we got a Hi-8 camera that we stole or robbed or borrowed from wherever we could get it from. And we went out and we did stuff. And Bachelor's Walk was done like that. And we were in the back of a van getting out, paying the local manager of the restaurant 100 quid to go in and shoot.
Sure.
In the, you know, no permits, none of that stuff. Our locations manager hated us. But that's the spirit from which we sort of come from. So it's, to me, to try and go off and tell a big Hollywood story is never going to work. There's too much competition. I don't know that world. What I do know is two people sitting at a piano in Walton's playing songs to each other.
But
the same scene. Actually,
no, I understand. I know. That sort of begin again.
Yeah. And there's a scene in Bachelor's Walk where Simon and Fiona Glasscock play a song together. And it's in Walton's and it's at a piano. And you rehearse and you get better at what you do, and then something comes along and you finally sort of get it right.
But you've also got the passion right through, because, I mean, one of the movies you didn't mention there that you made a Zone Out, you made a Once, sorry, yeah. pardon the pun. You made it once,
yeah.
and then, you know, whatever, and then you went back to it later on when you got a bit of money to do something to it. Isn't that right, or something along those lines?
We made Zone Ad, yeah. We made a pilot for Zone Ad, and then all we right. came back and we raised the money and did it properly.
Right,
or
yeah.
properly as with
when
money.
Steven Spielberg comes out and sees the movie once, and the famous quote that he said was, "Listen, once gave me enough inspiration to last for the rest of the year," or something like that. Yeah. I mean, does it do anything? Does it open a door? Does it turn a page? Does it say, "John, who?"
It does. It absolutely does. You know, those heavy hit for him to say that is amazing praise. And he's a great filmmaker and a great storyteller. And it does mean a lot when the sort of the big guns come out and bother to say something like that. Of course, it helps. I mean, it helps on a basic level of somebody who sees as many films as him and has come from such, you know, pedigree of filmmaker. You know, that's for something to not only to touch him, but for him to bother to sort of make a little press release or say anything about it. Of course, that's going to help in terms of getting your name out there and sort of, you know, it's a small Irish film. Anything helps.
Okay, now one of the biggest connections between Begin Again and Once is your whole belief in the idea of communication through music. Not just the healing thing of it, or not just changing lives or changing fortunes, but the actual sort of the way it can be used for communication. Do you ever think that you're onto something that a lot of other people necessarily aren't? They realise there's a mine to be, at least a gold mine to be kind of, you know.
Yeah, excavated or discovered in that way. I do think that increasingly probably people are communicating more and more through music than they were. I would say YouTube and I'd say there's loads of transatlantic relationships sparking off between kids online playing each other songs and back and forth. And actually, that's not a bad idea for a movie
Not a bad idea for a movie right there.
I'd say music is more prevalent even, Dave, than in our beginnings nowadays for kids, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would, definitely.
Like, I'd say they're scoring their entire life to music.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes in this movie, the story is nearly pushed aside so the good music can happen.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I believe that. I believe that every decision in my life was made with a record playing in the background.
Right. And getting Greg Alexander on board here is a guy who's known for writing hits that immediately sort of, you know, wire into people's brains, right?
Yeah, Greg's the guy that you get when your career is in trouble. And you need a chorus that, you know, is going to play in Italy as well as it's going to play in Dublin as well as it's going to on every rate. I mean, remember that song, You Get What You Give?
Yeah, that was the
one.
I remember.
I don't know what I was doing at the time. I think I may have been in the band, actually, but every city we went to, that song was playing on the radio. In every cafe, in every bar for like a summer.
Okay, there's been other songs that have been played in the radio down through the years, and to have them used in the movie, at one stage they're walking along the street and they sing these songs together and that.
Yeah.
I'd say that cost you a bleeding fortune.
It did.
What were they again?
Our music budget went through the roof. It was For Once in My Life by Stevie Wonder.
That's it. Yeah.
Look Be a Lady by Frank Sinatra. And then it was your man, Dooley Wilson, is it, from Casablanca? You must remember.
As time goes by. So the point about all those is to be able to use them in the movie even for a few short seconds costs a fortune, doesn't it?
It does. And especially when I think, you know, Harvey had come on board at that stage, so everybody wanted to sort of charge as much as possible.
It's Harvey now.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, fair enough. Okay. Listen, the casting as well. I mean, like, they couldn't come from such different parts of the whole thing. Everybody from CeeLo Green here to Adam Levine here from, what do you call it, Maroon 5.
Yeah, or CeeLo as I know him.
CeeLo, of course, yeah, sorry. Or Ad. And then, what was the other one I was going to mention? Yeah, James Corden as
well. Yeah, James is great in it. Yeah.
He is. I'd say he was delighted, though, to be part of a thing like this. I don't mean that as...
Yeah, I don't know. He was a great spirit. We went to see him on a show on Broadway that he was in.
Yeah, he's got a lot of awards for that.
And he was fantastic in it, yeah. One Man, Two Governors. He was hilarious in it. And it was not a part that I had imagined, actually. Dave was sort of Kira's best friend in it, kind of, you know, who maybe had a little bit of a crush on her. And they had both come from London and were sort of Brits in New York. But he just is such a... He's like, you know, you just... Every time you need to lighten the mood or have a joke or something sweet, he just delivers every time. He's a bit like Delaney in that way, actually.
Right.
Simon Delaney.
Simon,
he's guaranteed to get a smile no matter where he is. He's a real old school entertainer and a lovely guy. And he's... James Corden's going to be huge. I mean, he's already had a great TV career. But trust me, that guy is going to be a big, massive
star. All right, well, then look,
star.
Finally, as you say, it's coming out on July 11, is that right?
Yeah, July 11.
July 11. And the, like, just the big thing that a lot of people would like to know is that that's your man John Carney. He's running all in from around Dublin and the Frames and all that. Just the idea of being on set in New York, or the idea of trying to get things done with people as big as Mark Ruffalo and Keira Knightley. Yeah. Is there anything at all about the brown trousers of you? I mean, is there anything like where you just go, give me my bicycle clips now? I mean, do you know what I'm saying here? Like, this is scary stuff. Because Keira could, you know, she could dismiss you with a wave of her hand.
Yeah, I mean, you
but she's really nice and great to work with.
Well, you know, it's you have to kind of
The standard answer. Come on,
What's she really like? Well, you know, we have two very different ways of working, but that's good. It's good to have a healthy conflict on set. If everybody agrees with each other, it can be a little bit boring.
What? There are healthy conflicts. Tell me.
There are healthy conflicts. No, you couldn't get more different from Ruffalo and Knightley in terms of their approach to work. One is very methodical. The other is like, bring me out into the street. Let me go. Mark, you know, loves that sort of thing. And actually, incidentally, it's quite interesting. Mark should be the opposite, because Mark comes from the theatre background and Kira's from movies. So you would expect Kira likes to know her lines, know where to stand, know where the lights are. Mark is like, I don't care. I love the... it'd be more my way of working, which was good for the chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah.
Because it meant that each was bringing their game up to the degree of the next. So Kira was constantly surprised, so we used that. But also Mark was frustrated in a fun way by how buttoned down the Kira character was, in a way. Right. So he gave it that extra sort of energy. Yeah.
And you've got Hayley Steinfeld in there as well.
Hayley Steinfeld is a delightful young actress who was in True Grit. And won an Oscar for that.
She was the girl in True Grit.
She's incredibly talented, lovely to work with as well.
She was great in this movie. Person. I've just seen her in another movie, though. I wasn't too crazy about it.
No, she's
great.
Which is
3 Days to Kill with Kevin Costner. I didn't like
it. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I think people will enjoy, I think Irish people will enjoy this movie.
Oh, they love it. Yeah, I think they really will. Yeah. And
it's kind of a date movie without being intentionally a date movie, which was what once
I know,
was.
But it is a date movie. It's great. There's nothing wrong. Jeez, nothing wrong with that. There's no need to qualify
it's
date
It's two
movie.
For the price of one.
It is indeed. Okay, before I talk about the just next, like, what's after that? What's in 2 or 3 years' time, do you think? Or do you just think about the next
Spielberg.
One? Spielberg, right. Okay, fair enough. Well, you have the beard, so you're laughing. Okay, well then let's just take a look at this one that is next, which is Sing Street.
Yeah.
And now, is that S-I-N-G?
We're spelling it S-I-N-G as a little
but
sort
it's still
of play
John Millington
on S-Y-N-G.
Sing, is it?
It is still Sing Street. As
because
in,
you went to Sing Street, did you?
I went to Sing Street, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I went to a posh primary school to Sing Street for secondary school, which was sort of a little bit of a fish out of water story in and of itself. It was quite a tough, rough and ready sort of school. Christian Brothers were still there, but they were sort of losing their grip slightly, so you had a weird
lucky
conflict.
Old you.
But you had this interesting change sort of just beginning to happen. So it was 84 I was there, 83, 84.
So what's this autobiographical young John Carney?
This is a sort of like a loose memoir of going to school and forming a school band to sort of get on with, to sort of beat the bullies and the teachers.
So once again, can a song save your life?
I'm telling you, it's a great, it's true, you know. I don't know how many times I've talked my way out of, meeting a bunch of guys down some laneway who want to beat you up, and you somehow get them onto me. I'm telling you.
I thought you were going to say you suddenly burst into song.
No,
the
but you can tell.
The hills are alive. Oh. Yeah.
That's a good idea for a movie, actually. Horror musical. But no, but actually, remember school, whatever you wrote in your bag, whatever band you wrote in your bag.
The single most important thing. The worst thing of all was seeing a guy going around with a brown paper bag. I knew there was an album in it. You had to know the album. And if you took it off and it wasn't something you like, you said, there's a nerd.
Absolutely. Yeah. You were judged according to what you like. And do you know what I find, which is really interesting from those, that's different from those days to now, when I ask my nieces or nephew, whatever, you know, what are you into? Everything.
Yeah.
Do you find that?
And it's true.
And all these, for the Sing Street auditions, we've had like 1,000 kids in, and this kid will come up from, you know, Tala or from Pierce Street or from, you know, Lucan, play a song, like an Ed Sheeran song, play beautifully, sing, and the first question I'll ask him is, what are you into? Stock answer, I like a bit of everything.
Everything, yeah.
And it's amazing to me. It's like, because back then it was like you were loyal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Ramones,
you
and that's it.
It in your arm, for God's
and you
sake.
Got beaten up if it didn't subscribe to what your man liked. You were risking getting your head kicked in.
Speaking of the music, finally for this movie, just before we congratulate you again on Begin Again, there's been enough written about Bono and Edge getting involved in this musically and otherwise. Are they?
They are. They've been great on it, actually. Yeah.
Did they put their hands in their pockets?
They haven't needed to yet. Sure, Harvey's put his hands in his pockets and a few others. This is still a small film. It's not a big it's not like the Stones in Their Pockets thing with the big American film crew descending on an Irish town. It's a small film and it's a personal story. You know, if you had too much money on it, you wouldn't know where to spend it, in a way. You know, it's a very local, small story. But yeah, but the lads, Bono, I met after once, and he's been a great sort of champion and very helpful in getting things moving for me, and great on story, I have to say as well. Great on sort of, you know, if you pitch him a story for a film, he'd be very sort of instrumental, if you excuse the pun, on character and on ideas for stories. Edge likewise have come on board to sort of help me knock around this story and sort of put it into context a little bit, and they're going to write a couple of tunes for it and sort of supervise some of that musical dimension, or, you know, just help out on the musical sure. dimension of the film.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's Sing Street. That's down the line right now in terms of the 11th of July, Irish cinemas. It was called Can a Song Save Your Life? It's called Begin Again. John Carney, director and writer and everything other bloody else, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, writer, director.
Fair enough.
That'll do for the moment until I start put myself in my own movies.
All right. Thanks a million, John, for dropping in. Good man.
You're welcome. Thanks, Dave.